Well, sometime a group of people will sit down and they'll talk about who is the greatest Kerry sports person of all time. Impossible, of course, to determine it. But when it happens, one man will be high up in that list there, and that man is John Linehan. John Linehan, one of our greatest athletes, one of the greatest athletes ever to come out of this county. He has won championships in Kerry, Munster, Leinster, Connacht, Ulster, Ireland, won the World Hill Running Championship, and much, much more, too innumerable to mention. I visited him at his home out in Turin, where he grew up. We sat down and we had a chat about the area and about his career and much, much more. John, first of all, you're very welcome to Terrace Talk again.
Thank you, and delighted to be on it again with you, Rishi.
John, how many titles have you won?
Well, I suppose I started out, at winning local here in Wissain Community Games in Ballymacallagher and going on to county. I went on to win Munster titles and eventually won two national titles on the road before, I suppose, going on then to the mountain running. And I won the World Mountain Running, of course, in 1991. But and I would have won the Irish title in mountain running over numerous years, you know.
If you were to put a round figure on races that you have won, I know it's probably impossible, but on the number of races that you've been running for so long, we'll talk about that. How many championship races would you have won?
Races I'd have won, I suppose, which would be difficult to put a number on, but I would definitely have maybe up around 300 races won anyway, you know.
Would you have run in many races in your lifetime, a round figure, John?
I suppose around maybe double that, you know. Yeah, I probably would have won, maybe ran around 600 or 700 races, I suppose, you know, because I was racing, there was one stage in my career, I suppose, I was racing 3 or 4 times a week, you know.
Yeah. How did it all start?
I left school, I suppose, quite early. I left school at the age of about 12. And I was living home here in Ballymacallagher, and I suppose I became kind of felt a bit isolated having left school so early, and I kind of lost touch with my friends and thing. And I took an interest in getting a bit of training done, as I was interested in doing a bit of football with the local team in Ballymac. And I suppose that's kind of what kicked it off. I started doing a bit of training here at home, and then I ran a race in Castle Island in September 1976, actually. It was when I ran a road race in Castle Island. As part of my keep fit, I suppose, for the football here. And I did very well in it, finished well, very high up in it in that race, and I was quite young, you know, I was only 16. And the local club got me involved in athletics. They kind of, I suppose, picked me up on the night and said, look, you know, you'd be interested in doing athletics. And that's where I kind of got stuck into it from there on then.
Talk to me about your mother and your father and how many were in the family, John?
Well, I have two sisters, Anne and Winnie. They're both married now down in Ballymacallagher. And my mum and dad are alive and well, and they celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary there last week.
Going on from there then, when did you hit the national headlines?
I suppose I started to compete and maybe get recognition at national level, I suppose, at about the age, maybe around 21 or that way, which would be the early 80s, you know. And I was doing a lot of track running and cross country and road at that stage. I hadn't turned to the hills at all at that stage, you know. But yeah, around the early 80s, I think I began to make an impact at national level, you know.
Talk to us about your track career, John.
My track career, I suppose, was reasonably short-lived enough because of, I suppose, maybe because of my success on the road and because of the prize money and thing on the road in those years. But I used to do a lot of 5,000 metres and 10,000 metres on the track. And, you know, I finished up running 13.55 for the 5,000 on the track, and I got 29.36 for the 10,000 on the track. And I was only 21 at the time, which was, they were quite good times for somebody so young. And that got me selected in on the Irish Olympic panel. And I was sent over into Italy with the Irish Olympic panel, doing some warm weather training and learning techniques about track running and stuff like that. So, you know, that was a great experience. I never did actually make the final cut for the Olympic team, but I think that was maybe partly due to a couple of reasons. And maybe one of the reasons was I was very much into road running at the time and didn't maybe focus enough on the track at that aspect of it, you know.
Would it be a big regret in your life, John, that you never became an Olympian? Because if any man coming from this county or this country had the ability and to become an Olympian, it would have been John Linehan.
I suppose at the time, looking back on it now, maybe it's more of a regret now than it was at the time. because it's probably one thing that a lot of people will ask you is, did you ever compete in the Olympics, you know? And at the time, I suppose it wasn't that big an issue because I was really enjoying what I was doing road racing, and that's where I was at my strongest. And I had kind of, I suppose, divided away from the track racing and from which is what the Olympics are basically all about, is track racing and track and field events, you know. So yeah, looking back on it, yes, it probably means more to me now actually than it did at the time that I did miss out on that, you know.
What names on the track would come to mind that you were that you ran with and against back in those years?
Well, I would have ran against like Eamon Coughlin now and John Tracy, and I would have ran with Steve Ovett and Lassie Vern, all those guys. And there's numerous. I would probably, you know, I would have competed with probably all the top guys that was there at the time. I would have ran against them in Cork City Sports and those events, you know.
Then turning to the cross country, John, you had great success at that.
Yeah, funny enough, I suppose I started off, you know, failing to win either the Kerry Novice or the Kerry Intermediate, which would seem two very winnable events, but I suppose I built up slowly. I finished second in both of those, and then, as you know, I went on, I finished bronze medal in the Kerry Senior, and eventually went on to win the Kerry Senior 12 years in a row. Then at Munster level, I won the Munster Cross Country. It was probably unfortunate in the national cross country because, you know, that was the year when John Tracy and Gerry Deegan were at their best. And I finished second 1 year to Gerry Deegan, and I finished third the following year up in County Louth behind John Tracy and Gerry Deegan. But, you know, I hold the national medal for the national cross country, and I'm quite chuffed about that considering the guys that was ahead of me, you know.
Would your cross country career have lasted long?
Yeah, the cross country, I suppose, did the cross country. I stayed doing cross country for many years. I suppose there was a theory at the time that if you wanted to have a good road season, you needed to have a good cross country season behind you to give you a base for road racing through the summer. And I think maybe there was quite a lot to be said for that theory as well. You know,
of course, you were a regular on the Kerry team, the Kerry cross country team. John, who were the names of the men that ran with you at that time, and the people behind the scene? And of course, one of them was the great late Timmy Griffin, and there were probably other people you might like to mention.
Well, I suppose the people who were running with me at the time was John Griffin, of course, great friend and rival there from Tralee. And you know, you had Gerry Kiernan was on those teams, and Brendan O'Shea was another regular of those teams. They were the top names at the time on the Kerry teams, you know. Pat Griffin, then from Arfert, would have been coaching me at the time. And Timmy Griffin, of course. And Timmy, I suppose, played a bigger part more in later years in my mountain running career. And then in our own club in Castle Island, of course, I mean, Joe Walsh and Gerard, the Walsh twins, I mean, they were doing absolutely enormous work for athletics in the Castle Island area. And they were taking me up and down the country to all these events, you know, so they played a huge part as well, you know.
But you must hold a lot of Kerry Championship cross-country medals in Munster with them.
Well, I think I probably ended up winning, I think it was maybe 14 or 15 Kerry senior cross-country titles.
You see, John, you didn't mention that at all, and only if I mentioned it, it would have slipped us by. You'd want to start talking about what you won. That's what I'm here. That's what I'm here, sitting in the sun and listening to the river in front of us for. Anyway, you must have won a lot.
I would have picked up a good few medals over the cross country as well over the years.
And 14 or 15?
Yeah, I think it was 14 or 15 that I actually won, and I had a couple of runner-up positions as well, you know.
What about Munster?
Munster, then, I won the Munster title on one occasion, and again, I would have had a couple of minor placings, like second and thirds as well over the years, you know.
But you would have run in other cross-country competitions outside of what we're discussing then, John, wouldn't you? Different ones?
Oh, yeah, there would have been open cross-country races and anything like that. There wouldn't be holding an actual title, you know, so I would have done a lot of them over the years as well.
To put it into perspective, what age you now?
I'm 50 now this year.
You're 50. You started running when you were what age?
I started at 16, yeah.
And you're still running, John, and we'll come to that later. Now, after cross-country, of course, naturally enough, you became known nationally and internationally for your mountain, your hill running or mountain running, whatever was the right word to put on it. Talk to us about how all that started, because you became nationally known enough for that.
I suppose the mountain running for me began really back in the early, sort of maybe about 83, 84. We travelled over to the Isle of Man for an athletics festival over there. And I was basically going over with an interest in the road racing part of it, which consisted of two road races and one mountain race. I ended up coming third in both road races, and I won the mountain race quite easily. So I suppose that gave me sort of food for thought that, you know, here I was against the same opposition. And I couldn't believe how easy I won the mountain race. I came back to Ireland, and there was a race on up in Sligo. It's called the Warriors Race, and they had something like that £1,000 first prize, and there was sort of a whole lot of a big fuss about this race, and there was a world champion was coming over from England to take part. So naturally, I entered for that event, and I ended up winning that event as well. And I suppose I was hooked at that stage after those two successes, you know.
And it took off from there then, of course, John. And did you started training specifically then, I would imagine, for the hill running?
Yeah, I did. I suppose, you know, I felt that this was my strength, and I decided to work on that, and I started to study techniques of hill running. I started to change my training a little bit, and, you know, I suppose the area I live in here is an absolutely fantastic environment for hill running, and I started to avail more of that, and I was on the Irish teams then for travelling abroad for mountain racing. I was meeting other sort of top world-class mountain runners, and, you know, you'd sit around and you'd have a chat and you'd have a drink or whatever, and you'd discuss training techniques, and I began to learn a lot from that and from those guys. And they were, in fairness to them, they were very willing to help and give advice to a young person who was starting out, you know.
How many, we'd say, caps did you get for Ireland, roughly, John? How many times did you wear the Irish singlet?
Difficult to say exactly how many times, but I suppose, you know, as somebody said to me recently, I suppose I had the one sort of distinction that I ran for Ireland in track, road, cross country and mountain running. And, you know, it's probably, there isn't an awful lot of athletes who have represented Ireland in all of those events, you know.
Now, so talk to us about you became world champion, the build-up to that, and you must have been in your prime and everything. By the way, what weight were you then in your prime when you were coming to the world championships, and what weight are you now?
Well, I suppose, showing my age here, we'll go with the imperial system. I was about 10 and a half stone. I'm probably close enough on the same weight all the time, Weishi, you know. But that was my ideal racing weight, was just over 10 stone.
Now, John, we're sitting down here and we're going to be talking about the history of this place very shortly. But if you were standing over there now where that heap of stones is, and you were looking at these two men sitting down here, and I said to you, describe John Linehan there for us, that man sitting down in that log there with Weishi Fogarty. Describe him to us.
Oh, I don't know. It's a difficult one. I suppose I would describe myself as a person anyway who always give, you know, 100% into my training. I believed in training well, and, you know, and putting a lot of work into it, and, you know, and I think at the end of the day, a lot of people look upon sort of physical being the thing in competition, but I think an awful lot of it is mental as well. You have to be mentally tough, and you have to be one of these people who's not prepared to quit easily. And I think there's a lot of athletes, I think I've lined up against a lot of athletes who maybe physically were better athletes than me, but at the end of the day I had a sort of mental toughness that I would keep going right till the very end, and I think that won me a lot of races that I probably wouldn't have won otherwise, you know.
You were always very distinguishable, John, by your long hair. You still have it down, flowing, those flowing locks down around your shoulders, and I often described you to people that you were built like a belly dancer. Talk to us about what I've just said.
Well, for a start, I can't do any dancing anyway, so whatever about the build. I suppose I always had this sort of I was kind of associated with, you know, with the long flowing hair, and I'm certainly minding it as best I can to hang on to it as long as I can at this stage anyway, Weishi. But it's what can you say, really? You know, I suppose I was always kind of looked upon as maybe sort of a strong build runner or anything, you know.
Your physique, John, I remarked about, you were built like a belly dancer. You were very, very narrow waist, and you had light hips, and you had big enough shoulders. You were very strong physically. Did that help you in what we're going to be talking about the hill running as we move along?
It seems to have, you know. It seemed to have. I think that, you know, I suppose you know, I probably, you know, a lot of people said to me, did you do a lot of gym work over the years? And in truth, I didn't. But, you know, I've been living and working on a farm all my life. And I think, you know, I was doing a lot of manual work. And I think that helped to build up the strong upper body. And a lot of the hill runners there, a lot of the mountain runners there, you will notice that they have a strong built upper body, you know.
Do you know what we'll do, John? We'll go for a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about you winning the World Championship and your other feats on the mountains, and of course, we've lots more to talk about. We'll be back shortly. 066-712-3666, 083-300-3300, if you'd like to come in and pay your tribute to John Linehan.
Terrace Talk with Weishi Fogarty on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to this special programme and the life and times of John Lenehan. I visited him in his home in Turin, outside Castle Island, last week. The sun was blazing down. We were, well, we'll be describing lately where we were because we were in a very, very special place. John, just before the break, we were talking about you becoming world champion.
Yeah, well, I suppose that happened back in 1991. But I suppose, you know, things like that don't just happen. There's a lot of years of building up, and I suppose there's a lot of, as they say, blood, sweat and certainly tears as well in getting there. The previous year, 1990, I was competing over in Austria in the World event, and that year I actually collapsed and I ended up in an ambulance. And I remember that evening actually back at the hotel, and Mary was with me, my girlfriend, my wife now, she was with me at the time. And I remember saying to her that evening that I'm retiring and that I'm never going to run a world championship race again. I was so down after having collapsed and dropped out, or whatever you call it. And, you know, it makes you, I suppose, ask the question, you know, sometimes do people pull up too soon or pull out too soon? Because had I pulled out that year, you know, I would have missed all the glory of going back 12 months later and actually winning the gold medal, you know.
Yeah, talk to us about that race, John, and what did it mean to you? And looking back at it after all those years, what year was it again?
1991. I suppose I travelled over to, it was on in Switzerland, the foot of the Matterhorn, and I travelled over, sort of very keen to get the memory of the previous year out of my head. And I had trained well, and it was one of those years that training had gone quite well, in the sense that I hadn't come down with any injury, so my training was good. I suppose I was hoping maybe someday to win a medal in the World Championship event, because I had been knocking on the door with a, you know, sort of fifth and sixth for a couple of years, and I said it'd be great to finish my career with a medal. That year everything just clicked into place for me, and I worked my way through the field, and I ended up coming in and winning the gold medal that particular time, you know. And I suppose, in fairness, it's something that has really stuck to me ever since, you know.
Who accompanied you out to that race, John, and who were your team members?
Our team manager at the time was a guy called Douglas Barry from Dublin, and my teammates then was Robin Bryson, who actually came in fourth that year. And I mean, Robin actually came fourth in two World Championship events, and we had Eamon McMahon and Tommy Payne from up from County Louth as well. So they made up our team, which actually took the bronze medals.
Yeah. What was the homecoming like?
The homecoming was absolutely amazing. I never entered my head that there would be anything organised here when I come back. And I arrived into Dublin Airport, and some number of friends had turned out there to greet me back. And I actually travelled across to Sligo to where I'd won the Warriors race. And, you know, I was just keen to go back there because I felt that that's where it had all really started for me, was at the Warriors race. And so I went over and I met the people who had organised the Warriors race, and they actually put on a reception for me in Sligo in Strandhill. And eventually I made my way home to Kerry probably about a week later. And sure, when I came back here, there was banners and buntings up at every crossroads, you know. I just couldn't believe it, you know.
Why didn't you win a second world, John?
Again, I suppose you're looking at it. It is a world event, and I think you just need to, everything has to be 100% on the day to win a world title, because there's so many guys there who are so close to winning that title, and only one can do it, you know. And I went back the following year, and I was up there in a position to win it, but at the end, you know, I ended up coming in fifth in it, you know. And that's just the way it goes, you know.
The late Timmy Griffin christened you King of the Mountains, and rightly so, Royal King of the Mountains. And of course, you'll be renowned really for your wins on Cairn Toul. Now, if we could turn to this and talk to me, John, about how many times you ran it and your record for it, and what was it like, and any falls you may have had, and the people who opposed you, and when it all began.
Cairn Toul began for me back in probably the second half of the 80s, it was around 86 roughly, Cairn Toul race started. I came in on the second year of the Cairn Toul race, and I knocked something like 40 minutes off the course record for the previous year, running 1 hour and 11 minutes, and that was from as we call it, the Hydro Road up over Cahir onto Cairn Toul and back by the same route. And I suppose, you know, what amazed a lot of people, I think, is that I actually came down off Cairn Toul in less than 25 minutes that day from the top down. And that record actually still stands today, you know. I went on to win it 19 years. And I competed in it 21 years, actually. And as I say, that's, you know, the time record still stands anyway, you know.
You ran in it 21 times. You won 19. How did you lose the other two?
I think one occasion I probably, in fairness, I shouldn't have lined up. I was in very bad form. I finished up fourth. The other occasion, I suppose it came late in my career when I came up against a very good Scottish international by the name of John Brooks. And after a ferocious battle, John beat me in the end. And John, incidentally, was in Switzerland the year that I won the World Championship. He was on the minor team that year for Scotland. And he was an exceptional athlete as well. And but I suppose I always kind of look back and say, well, he beat me on Cairn Toul, but he was still well outside my course record, and I think that meant a lot to me.
What was your strategy, John, running up Cairn Toul and coming down Cairn Toul? What approach does a person have to do tackling a monstrous mountain like that? What goes through your mind?
I suppose to answer the question properly, I would say that, you know, a lot of people ask me, was it going up or coming down was my strong point? And the answer was, I suppose, I was pretty equally balanced on both. There was a lot of people who could run strong uphill but couldn't come down, or vice versa. I seemed to have a balance that I could do well on both without being exceptional in any of the two, but I could put the two together. It goes back, I suppose, to what we said a while ago about mentally you have to be very focused. And you have to stay very relaxed taking on a mountain likes of Cairn Toul. You have to try and stay as relaxed as you can, otherwise you're going to burn up all your energy early on. Mentally, you have to be tough and you have to be confident that you can overcome not only the athletes you're competing against, but you've also got to overcome the elements. Because, I mean, I've raced on June Bank Holiday in Cairn Toul, and I've had to cope with hailstones there. I've had to cope with storm, you know. And you have to be able to take all that in your stride. The other thing, I suppose, about mountain running is that things will go wrong up there. And you have to be able to cope with that. You have to be able to, you know, not panic, stay cool, and correct whatever went wrong. And so, you know, a lot of people think it's just a matter of just racing to the top and racing back down. Thing about mountain running, there's an awful lot of thought has to go into it, and you're forever facing different elements, and you have to adjust to those elements. I think that's what makes mountain running so exciting.
Now, you're also well known to people that follow you, and people everywhere. You're known as the Iron Man, because you've suffered a lot of injuries. You run with injuries, and you've suffered injuries when you were running. Talk us about what you've gone through, John.
I have, yeah. I've suffered a lot of injuries over the years, but I suppose, you know, I used to train very hard and put in a lot of mileage, and you know, that does come with the territory, you know, especially when you're racing up and down mountainsides, you know. The worst injury I had, strangely enough, was in training when I broke my leg on Cairn Toul. And but in racing, you know, while I've taken maybe a few falls and things on it, I've been fortunate. I've never had a bad injury while racing on the mountains, you know.
Weather conditions every year, would they have varied? Would you be a man for, well, you're a man for all seasons, there's no doubt, but did you prefer, what type of conditions did you prefer?
I was very much known for being an athlete that loved the sunshine and loved the heat. I competed well in warm conditions, and quite often I think that was to my advantage, maybe when I competed abroad in warm conditions abroad, you know. But definitely, yeah, the warm conditions suited me, yeah.
Outside of those 19 wins in Cairn Toul, John, what other events, what other wins, what other days come to your mind that stands and remains itched there?
I suppose winning the Snowdon race in Wales will always be up there, you know. That was a fantastic achievement, and I mean, I got such excitement out of winning that race. There was 800 runners competed there in Snowdonia for that, and I'll never forget the reception of coming in off the mountain after a 10-mile race and coming through the town, and it was like sort of the Rosa Tralee festival with the crowds lining the street and coming in to win. That will be right up there with winning the World Mountain Running Championships. I won the Isle of Man. I went back and won the Isle of Man, the three events in the Isle of Man. That was another one that will stand in my mind. And I won a 10K out in San Diego. I think that meant a lot to me as well, you know.
You regularly won the Munster, Leinster, Ulster and Connacht titles to win, and that made you Irish champion. How many times would you have won those, roughly, John? And how many times were you Irish champion?
To be well up in the double figures, anyway.
Sorry. Very welcome back to the programme. I'm talking to John Lennon, the King of the Mountains, one of the greatest athletes this county or this country has ever produced. We're talking about his life and times, and we're talking in his home place. I visited John in his home in Turin, a wild, mountainy place, beautiful, sun beaming down, and we'll talk about that very, very, very soon. You're training, John. You train very hard. You showed me some of the places out here. We've travelled where you've trained, and the type of exercise that you did. It's a fantastic place, beautiful place. What type of training did John Lennon do and how often?
Well, I suppose at my peak, I was running 150 miles a week. And at that time, the top roadrunners and all those in the country were doing, you know, they were doing 150. They were doing, some of them were doing 200 miles a week. So that was the type of training as far as mileage was concerned. Now, I did a lot of training here in these local woods around here. And I suppose in one way, you know, look back and I think Mick Murphy a bit on this occasion, the cyclists and Cahir Sailean down there. But I mean, I used these woods a lot for training. I had my own sort of gym here that I used to go in and train inside the woods. And it's beautiful inside. It's so peaceful going to a wood and have your own little training regime to do in there. And I did a lot of my I did all my training basically here for around my own doorstep here. As you can see, you know, the start of the woodlands and the mountainside here, it's a joy to get out and just run over those hills, you know.
When you said you set up your own sort of a gym, the very same as the Iron Man Mick Murphy, the cyclist, the last Halton winner, what type of a gym had you set up?
Well, I suppose I had everything from I was doing chin ups with I had a board knelt across a couple of trees. I was doing chin ups on that. I had a concrete block set up inside in the wood for doing squat jumps onto that. I had a rope hanging over a glen off a limb of a tree where I would maybe shimmy up sort of 30 feet of rope and do several times up and down the rope, that type of thing. But, you know, I do that maybe once a week. But I say I love that type of training. Yeah.
How far used to push yourself, John? Would you push yourself to what limit?
I suppose I always would look upon my training too. I never went 100% in effort in training. I think that was something you had to say for a race day. I think if you push too hard, you're taking it out of your body, you know. I trained hard, yes, but I certainly didn't train myself into a state of exhaustion. That didn't work for me. I had to leave something in reserve and spare that for a race day. But I was committed to my training in that I wasn't one person who would maybe train 3 or 4 days a week. I would train 7 days a week. I would train maybe, you know, twice a day most of those days. So I was very committed and I had a discipline that I stuck to in training.
Do you think that if you hadn't come from this wild, rugged environment, beautiful place, this hidden place where we are now doing this interview, do you think that we wouldn't have seen the John Lennon that we had known?
Well, there's no doubt that it definitely helped me because, I mean, I was born and reared here and I was up and down these hills from an early age. So, you know, I developed a sort of a technique for up and down these mountains. And I would have no doubt it played a huge part in molding me for the career that I ended up doing, you know.
Of course, since all that has begun, John, you've met your girlfriend and you've got married. Talk to us about your wife.
Well, I met Mary and I suppose, you know, she got into the athletics and started doing a bit of training with me, and she went on to be quite successful herself in the running. We ended up winning a lot of doubles in races up and down the country, and she went on to represent Ireland in Edinburgh in the World Mountain Running Championships. And I suppose I feel one of her greatest achievements was she went to Dublin for the Women's Mini Marathon, and she finished up coming seventh out of something like 10,000 women. And she ran a time that day of just over 35 minutes, just under 36 minutes for 10K. And there's a lot of men out there that haven't running that kind of times at the moment.
I was just going to ask you about diet, but I can visualise Mary and John sitting down for their dinner. I wonder what kind of a dinner would two top athletes have in front of them. What about diet and what part of that play in your life?
Well, I suppose, you know, again, growing up here on the farm, we had a very healthy diet, you know. I mean, we grew all our own products here on the farm, my dad and you know, so we had all just, you know, just go out to the garden for your dinner and, you know, and get it prepared and all that. So, yeah, we had a very, very healthy diet growing up. I suppose a lot of people maybe listening to the programme who know me will be smiling away because they know that I'm noted for my sweet tooth and I can be seen inside in chip shops and things, which amazes people at times. But what I say to them is, look, I do allow myself the treats. I do go into a chip shop. I do have my fast food, but I don't live off it. I make sure to have a good diet outside of that, you know.
You never smoked, of course, John. Did you drink?
Never smoked and basically never really drank. I've rarely drank anyway, you know.
What other Kerry sportsmen and women have you admired?
I suppose, I'd be honest with you, I really admire anyone who's into sport because I think it's a fantastic discipline, you know. But, you know, sort of like growing up, in my growing up days, I mean, it was natural to be listening every Sunday to the radio and listening to Michael Connell and playing football and Michael Dwyer, and they were sort of two names that were really etched into my memory as I grew up, you know, because my dad was fantastic, interested in football, and those two guys stood out for me. But I suppose as I went on later on in years, then I began to get to know the athletes and, you know, I suppose the very first athlete that I began to read about in the papers was Willie Conan from Tralee, and Willie had won the Kerry Senior Cross Country 3 years in succession, and he was sort of the first athlete that I actually latched onto and began to follow his career, you know. And of course, as the years went on, then people like Gerry Kiernan and John Griffin became people that had huge admiration for them, you know. And we're talking about within Kerry now, you know.
Yeah, and of course you have the our Olympians, and you'd have Gillian O'Sullivan and likes of Paul Griffin and Sean Casey and Cathal Meinen and other people who became oarsmen. What do you think of other athletes that reached that stage? We say, for instance, now those people I've mentioned now that became great oars people.
Well, again, I mean, people like that are absolutely special. You know, they have to have something special in them, you know, and I mean not just physically. Again, you're coming back to the mental thing. I mean, I've met so many people who've said, oh, such a person would have been a great athlete if he'd stayed at it. But that's the if, isn't it, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's the difference. That's what makes people stand out, that no matter what knocks are thrown in their way or what happens, they will get around it, they will fight on, and that, I think, is what makes those people special and makes them stand out.
But your career is far from over, John. Because, what age did you say you were?
I'm 50 now in October.
You're 50 in October, but there's a big race coming up, out for them. Tell us about it and how you qualified for that and who's going with you.
Well, there is. We're heading off to Poland next month for the World Masters event, and I'm competing in the over 45 event. Now, a lot of people are saying that, you know, this is the wrong year to go because I'm sort of 6 weeks too young for the over 50, so it's probably a bad year to go in. But look, you know, it just worked out that this year has gone okay for me in training, and I've always been looking forward to going to Poland, and so I'm going to give it a go, head over there. And the way I look at it is, look, you know, next year I'll be an over 15 in the World Championships, and this year's experience will surely stand to me, and I would definitely be hoping to go looking for a medal, hopefully next year if things went right. There's a big crowd of us heading over. There's about 20 of us heading over from my own area around here in Kessel Island, Ballymac area, coming along, and there's an Irish team, and I think we've a strong Irish team, because Robin Bryson, who finished fourth in Switzerland the year I won, he's on the team again this year for this Masters event. So I think we've a strong team that could be capable of finishing very close, if not in the medals.
And what about Kerryman going with you?
There's one Kerry girl competing, and that's Magella Diskin. She's competing in the women's over 50 event. Now there's a lot of lads here travelling with me, who, you know, people like James Doran. Now, for instance, James is just back from competing for Ireland in the European Championships in Bulgaria, and James is coming over now. James is obviously not going to qualify to compete in the Masters as yet. He has a few more years to go, but James is going to compete over there in an open mountain race, so it'll be interesting to see how he'll do in that event. And it's nice for James. He's already done his part this year. He's competed for Ireland in the European Championships, and this is going to be a much lower key event now for him, and something that he should really enjoy over there.
You're a very level-headed man, John. You're thinking and you're focused on what you're doing. What part does your religion play in your life?
I suppose I'm not a very active church goer every Sunday, but I would definitely say that I would be a spiritual person, I suppose, you know, and would certainly try to live by the good book as best possible, you know.
Did you ever have a spiritual experience when you were out training in the mountains and the woods and up or coming down or at the height of anything? Was there ever a time when you felt in the height of all your pain and suffering, running and all you were putting in, that somebody else was helping you?
I suppose it's difficult to know, but I mean, definitely when you're out there in training, and training in particular in these types of woods here, it's, you know, there's something so peaceful about it. You're sort of absorbing the peace of it, that it's almost like being in a different world sort of thing, you know.
John, where exactly are you from? Talk to us about this area we are here, and describe to our listeners in vivid detail where we are.
Well, my townland that I'm living in here is called Tourine, and just behind your back across the river is Lownagiinty. And the valley that stretches across, there's a valley along below you here, and that stretches right out. If you follow that right out along, you can see Tralee Bay, and you can see right back to Brandon Point, you know. And this is all, this area is probably, you know, there's a lot of history associated with this back through the years, you know.
Yeah. When you say there's a lot of history, tell us, you're involved in a project at the moment, a big project, a 3 or 4 year project at the moment, and talk to us about what you're doing, John, and the places. Just here now, in front of us, there's the ruins of a very old, old cottage. We'll talk about all that. What's the project?
Now, the project is it's a walkway, and it's been developed here by the North and East Kerry Development, and they're the rural social scheme, and we have a number of across the hill here from you. Even at the moment, you can see people are walking away there and creating steps and walking and creating a pathway up the side of the hill there. It's going to be about 7 miles when this walk is completed, and it's under the Fall to Ireland umbrella, so you know people will be able to access it through the internet there and check up on it when it's all up and running. You know,
now, there's a number of areas, John, that you've shown me that we've passed and we've walked, and there's a number of stones erected with writings on them. Talk to us about them. There's one just directly in front of us.
I suppose there's three that stand out, and there's one just beside us here, which is erected to the memory of Captain Robert Monteith. And this plaque was erected here recently on Good Friday and unveiled by Arthur Lenehan down in Ballymacelligate. It was his ancestors played a big part in bringing this Captain Robert Monteith to this little broken down cottage that you're looking at here. Who was Captain Robert Monteith? Well, many people might remember Roger Casement's arrival at Bannerstrand, and there was three people involved in that submarine landing in Bannerstrand, and only one of the three escaped without being captured, and that was Captain Robert Monteith. And he was hidden in numerous places, but just where you stand here was his final hiding place before he actually managed to escape out of Kerry. So that would be Captain Robert Monteith. The other plaque that you were looking...
Before, John, before you leave that now, we were talking... You have read the book... Mm-hmm. A special book that Monteith wrote, and somebody gave it to you. But there's a huge big mountain towering over us here on the right, and we're down in the valley. There's a beautiful stream. What was described in the book? Because you have told me, and I can visualise exactly, because it's as you said it.
Well, when Robert Monteith got back to America, he eventually wrote a book on his experiences in Ireland, and I want to maybe thank Tim Horgan there, and truly Dr. Tim Horgan, for presenting me with that book at the opening here of this year on Good Friday, at the unveiling. He did indeed. I read his book with great interest, and he actually spent quite a lot of detail about his stay here in Glaunigeinte, and he described about how he came down that towering mountain behind our back here in the dark of night. They weren't allowed to use any lamps for fear they'd be observed. And he described in his book how he actually crossed this river just beside us here, and it was swollen with a flood, and he got soaked crossing the river. And he said there was this lovely little well-kept path leading up to the door of this little cottage here in the woods, and how he came up and how he was received with welcome by the hermit that lived here in the woods. But he said, you know, that he sat here in this little valley the next day. He said it was like the scene was fit for any picture drome. He said, with the purple-clad, heather-clad mountains and the little gurgling stream leading down to the river. And he said it was just the most beautiful setting that he could ever picture. And he described all that quite vividly in his book when he went back to America.
And John, as you have described it, as he described it in the book, and we're listening to the gurgling of the stream here and the soughing of the wind going through the trees and the mountains and the old broken down house behind us, nothing has changed, has it?
Well, we've still got the same atmosphere here, and we've still got the same beauty, and it's a great thing that has gone unspoilt down through the years. And I mean, you look at all those wonderful, look at all the different types of trees that's growing around us here. You know, there's just loads and loads of different types of trees, and I think it's a little gem that hopefully that this walk will introduce, that a lot of people will get introduced to this area through this walkway when it's up and running.
I can see thousands of people taking advantage of this walk, and I can tell you, with people out there listening, make sure when it opens that you'll take it in sometime. Talk to us about another one of the monuments erected.
Well, as we drove here earlier on, I just showed you one there, and that was erected to the Earl of Desmond, the last Earl of Desmond, back in the 1500s. He was in hiding here, and he was captured, he was betrayed, he was captured, and he was beheaded here. So that plaque marks the place where he fell, and right behind us up on the hill there, on the next shelf up, is if you look at any of the old maps, is Earl of Desmond Castle, and the site of it is all that's there now. But, you know, many people have arrived to my doorstep asking me where is the site of the Earl of Desmond Castle. So it's a tourist interest. And that was the Earl of Desmond, the last Earl of Desmond. And I suppose the one other incident that we're sort of, this area is very famous for, is the path that leads up along by the bank of the river now. That path is actually following the same route that was taken by the one Stephen Fuller, who escaped the Ballyseedy massacre that time back in, I think it was 1923. And Stephen Fuller was brought up along this path. There was no path there at the time, just brought up through the woodland. up to the river, up by the river, and he was taken up to my grandmother, which was the Boyle household, and she gave up her bed for him that night, and she has some, you know, she had many great stories for me about her time spent with Stephen Fuller, you know.
Have you been imbued, John, growing up with the history of this place, and would you class yourself as a historian?
I wouldn't class myself as a historian, but I will tell you one thing, is that over the years, in later years, I have taken a ferocious interest in the history of this area, and I suppose now, with the erection of this walkway here, I am probably more conscious of learning what I can, and I've also probably found there's a lot of people coming into the area who are very keen to learn what they can about that history of this area, and I'm doing my best to try and pick up what history I can and explain that to the people, you know.
Who was instrumental, John, for erecting these plaques or these monuments and getting the work done in this walk? Has it been going on now for 2 years, maybe 3 years? There's another couple of years left in it. Have you played a huge part in it?
I was probably, it was one of those things that I sort of fell into my lap by chance. There was a walk trying to be organised from Tralee to Killarney. There was an inspector came down from Dublin. He wasn't hugely keen on a walk with him, Tralee to Killarney. He was very interested in a loop walk. And I explained to him that I was where I was living. I explained to him there was a beautiful area, and I felt that a loop walk could be constructed in my area. He came, he had a look, and he was very impressed. I suppose I took him around to all the beauty spots I could to show him, to impress him, and he was very impressed with it.